time to wake to sleep with Sleep Science Today, where we learn to sleep well with your host, Andrew Kolsky, on UK Health Radio.
Welcome to another episode of Sleep Science Today. I'm your host, Andrew Kolsky. Today, we're going to be learning about Spain and how Spain treats sleep issues, and maybe we'll do a little compare and contrast between Spain and the U.S. My guest today is Maria Jose Aróstegui Ruiz, and she is a psychologist who is an expert in sleep medicine in Spain. So, welcome.
Thank you very much for the introduction, Andrew, and it's a pleasure for me to stay here and speak a little bit about my country and how we treat sleep problems.
Yes, thank you. You and I had an opportunity to speak a little bit before the podcast, and we learned a lot about each other, and I really appreciate that, but I wanted to share that story so that people around the world understand how different countries might approach similar types of issues. So, you know, to help us understand that, maybe it would help if you give us a little bit of background about yourself and what got you into sleep medicine in the first place.
Okay, well, since I was studying my degree, I was drawn to the field of sleep medicine. And through an opportunity that I have, I participate in a research program. Well, where I can investigate about the quality of life in patients with sleep apnea and with treatment with CPAP. So it was my opportunity to learn and discover this wonderful world. So I was learning the clinical practice within sleep consultations with an expert, and I love each case that I have been in those practices. So yeah, all the sleep problems caught my attention, and I wanted to learn how to treat them in order to help people sleep better and therefore have a healthy life, because night and day always go hand in hand. So after my degree in psychology at the University of Granada and my master's degree in general health psychology in Almeria, I decided to improve my knowledge of sleep and completed with another master, about sleep medicine at the University of Murcia, all of them cities of Spain.
Oh, wow.
Yes, very interesting. I was always very interested in all those things. So yeah, very cool. And my final papers in all those masters and stuff were obviously focused on sleep. So I think that because of my personality, I venture to present one of them as an oral communication that it was about the quality of the sleep in immigrant population. So in a neurophysiology conference. So, well, in this point, it is worth mentioning that my mother, who's a doctor, a neurophysiologist, has a lot to do in my influence about sleep and that sleep had on me.
Mm.
Well, I have to say all of them. And since then, I joined the Spanish Sleep Society, and I like sleep more and more, sharing different cases with oral specialists and learning from everyone seems to me to be a fantastic way to train myself both professionally and personally, and thus help those patients with the sleep problems. So after that, after all that knowledge that I have to study so for so many years, I have a very important opportunity for me in that moment of my life, that it was like a trainee in a one of the best sleep clinics in Spain, in Barcelona, at Dr. Estevill Sleep Clinic. And there I was surrounded by wonderful professionals. And in the end, thanks to the level of English I have, I know that it could be better, but I try to defend myself. And the fact that there are many English speakers in the south of Spain, I was working for a few years doing therapy in English and Spanish. So that's more or less my background, and that's how I personally became interested in sleep medicine.
Great, great. Well, I'd love to do a little bit of a comparison here, because you went through a lot in all sorts of training to get to where you are in Spain, and I'd love to compare that to what we do here in the U.S. So let me ask you first, when you were getting your PhD, your psychology degree, without you deciding to specialize towards sleep, would they have taught you anything about sleep, or did you have to specifically go find the information?
Yeah, I think that it was something related with serendipity, because in the degree, we only have one subject, that is physiology, psychological physiology. And there is the point where we learn a little bit about circadian rhythms or sleep progress, how it's all processed in our minds, in our brain. And that's the only thing here in Granada, where I live, it's how we learn about that. So it was because my mother's influence, the opportunity of that investigation, and then I look for that pathway.
Right. And so in the U.S., for example, when I was in school, we didn't even ever talk about sleep at all. It was never part of any of our subjects. It was never part of any of our discussions. Yet it's so important to physical health and mental health. And it really hasn't gotten the attention that it needs. And I think nowadays we're starting to see people talking more about sleep. So, you know, I had to go out on my own and get my own training, and pretty extensive training, a lot of extra work, a lot of extra time, but it's because I, like you, had an interest in sleep and I went out and got the training. So, you know, when people are looking for people to help them with their sleep issues, it's important that they be educated about their providers, and they ask the questions, what type of training do you have? What type of experience do you have? Because there's a lot of people out there who, no fault of their own, but they just didn't receive any training in sleep, and they're trying their best, but they don't really have the background or the information. So seems like it's, you know, similar between our countries, that there you have to go out and get your own training.
Yeah, more or less. It's because of ourselves.
Right, right. So if someone in Spain wants to practice sleep medicine, do they have any particular type of certification or license or anything, or it's just they get their own training and state that they do it? How does that part work?
It depends on the specialist. I mean, for example, for doctors or odontologists, they have like a proper certification going with the Spanish Sleep Society, for example. But for psychologists, because this is not very common here in Spain, it's something very, very specific. We don't have like this exam of this accreditation. So, but we have another way, and I think that it's a very good way, and it's the European Sleep Society. I mean, it's a bigger background and a bigger organization. You can go, but below some requirements, like you have to see or have practice, clinical practice, with 100 patients with different sleep disorders, and you have analyzed polysomnograms, and among others. And if you have all that requirements, you can go to this exam, and it's every year. And if you can pass this exam, if in the category of a psychologist, you will be recognized as a somnologist, expert in behavioral sleep medicine. Doctors and other specialists, it's easier for them because in the Spanish way, but psychology is a little bit complicated.
Right. So because of all of the additional work that's required, in Spain itself, how many people, from a psychologist perspective, how many psychologists are you aware of that specialize in sleep issues?
Well, the amount of people of sleep psychologists that I know, we are more or less 10, 15 or something, because this is the people who are in the Spanish Sleep Society. I mean, they have enough knowledge and training doing the CBTI. But in Spain, more or less, almost every psychologist have like a minimum of knowledge to treat a sleep disorder. But, well, more or less insomnia. But if it's a mild insomnia, if it's a bigger problem or major problem, you need someone who is very specialized in that. And in Spain, recognize there are so very, very low people here in Spain.
Right. And that sort of, you know, highlights what we're talking about, is that there's not a lot of people that are accurately or productively trained in sleep medicine in most countries that I'm aware of anyway. And so it is an emerging field, and it's an important field. I think you were telling me in our prior conversation that you're in the south of Spain and you're the only one trained?
That I know personally, psychologists, I think so. We are in the south of Spain. Here is the autonomic area is Andalusia. There are a lot of people in Sevilla and in Almeria and in Malaga, but in this Spanish Sleep Society, or with the accreditation, as I know, the only one, I think that I'm the only one.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So
wow.
It's very interesting, because I don't know why there are no people knowing that there are a lot of patients with the sleep problems. It's something very specific, but it's very strange to see this. Mm-hmm.
So in your experience, do you find that people in your country who are having sleep problems, do they recognize that, you know, there's doctors they can go to address it, or do they just assume they just have to deal with it?
I think that because of COVID, people started to know about taking care of their health. And in this category, it goes sleep, a good quality of sleep. So even though nowadays there are a lot of people who have the belief that, oh, it is normal to sleep bad or to take pills if I want to sleep better, because it's the easy way to sleep better. But I think that more and more people have the perception that they need to sleep better and improve their quality of life, because it's something basic of basic life.
Right, right. So
that's my perspective. I could be wrong, but that's my point of view.
Right, right. And we can only speak from what our experience is, so I appreciate that. And, you know, one other question here is, in the U.S., if somebody wants to get a sleep study, for example, that's something that's done by a medical doctor, an MD, someone with a medical degree. Then we have psychologists, we have mental health folks who do behavioral sleep medicine, which is more insomnia, CPAP compliance, other types of issues. Is it the same in Spain? If someone wants a sleep study that's going to be done by a doctor? Is that the same?
Yeah, it's the same. I mean, if you're a patient and you have sleep problems, you cannot sleep well, or your partner says that you have, I don't know, apnea or something like that, the first step is to go to your family doctor. You tell all these things in the interview to your medical doctor, and your medical doctor says, okay, maybe I will send you to sleep consulting, and there a neurophysiologist or a pneumologist will explore better and deeper and know if it's interesting in your case to have a polysomnogram. And in that interview with the neurophysiology or whoever the doctor is, it's when they explore and if they have like a sign that maybe you have apnea or hypopnea or restless legs problems or whatever the thing or another sleep disorder, they'll make an appointment one night, and then you go to the hospital, you can go that night there, and they have their sleep study.
Great, great. Well, this is a perfect spot for us to take a commercial break. So let's break away for commercial, and we'll be right back on Sleep Science Today.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
All right, we're back on Sleep Science Today. This is your host, Andrew Kolsky. We're talking with Maria Jose Arostegui Ruiz, and she is a psychologist working with sleep issues in Spain, and we're doing a comparison between Spain and the United States. So we just talked about sleep studies. Another question I have related to that is sleep medications. Is it the same in Spain as it is in the U.S. that only medical doctors can give sleep medications, or can psychologists do that?
No, it's the same like in the States. I mean, psychologists, we know a lot about psychopharmacology because we need to know all how the body and the mind react when you're taking sleep pills. But are the doctor who supervise and give this kind of medication. So we are working hand in hand with the doctors.
Got it. Yeah, same here. Mm-hmm. So, all right. So one other question about sort of qualifications and all, and then I want to move to some other issues. But if someone is a psychologist in Spain, or if they're a student, for a PhD in Spain, what do they have to do to become an expert in sleep in terms of what are requirements versus all the things that you did, which sound like they're above and beyond?
Yeah. Well, more or less, if you want to be a psychologist specialized in sleep disorders, you need firstly to have the degree. Here, some years ago, we changed our procedure or our process to have like a university title, and our preparation are for 4 years only. And then you need a master of 2 years so you can practice, get more knowledge and get some practice in a specific area. Here in Spain, for example, you have this psychology degree, and then you have the general health psychology master's degree. So with that, you can work as a private general health practitioner or psychologist. But if you want to go deeper, you have to look for yourself the way to prepare and get more knowledge about sleep. There's a very good, there are a lot of courses, a lot of master's, private master's degree. There is the one that I did in Murcia. It's a very complete one. Mm-hmm. And it helps a lot, belong to the Spanish Sleep Society, for example, or the European Sleep Society, because every year at the conferences and the courses, they hold all sleep problems and their treatments are shared in a multidisciplinary way. And this means that you're up to date when it comes to carry out the therapy. So with that, you can have a lot of information. I think that being big dreamers, I think that the best or the to reach the main objective is this accreditation that I mentioned before about being an expert in sleep as a sleep psychologist, like being a somnologist with this European Sleep Society with this accreditation.
Right, right. So it's, you know, comparing that to the U.S., in the U.S. we have relatively similar. So you've got your medical doctors, which they get a 4-year degree, and then they go to medical school, which is another several years, 4 years, you know, plus residency, plus. So they work very hard to get that degree. We've got our PhD and PSYD, PsyDs, which are doctorate level psychologists. So they'll go to 4 years of university and then typically another 4 to 6 years or so of additional training. And then we have master's level practitioners, lots of different types of degrees. You've got licensed professional counselors, licensed mental health counselors, social workers, marriage and family therapists, a whole group of different types of master's level degrees. And they also are qualified to study and provide, you know, behavioral sleep medicine issues. So very, very similar in that regard. So, you know, anyone who's listening to this and is interested from a professional standpoint of getting into the field of sleep medicine, there's a lot of different routes depending on where you are.
Wow.
So, yeah. So let me ask you this then. In terms of the types of sleep issues that you might see people for, can you give us a rundown of the types of things that you work with?
Well, mainly I work with insomnia patients. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's the most common and the most frequently sleep disorder. Here in Spain, there are a lot of insomnia problems, chronic insomnia. But it depends. Sometimes you have rhythm cycles disorders, or you have apnea disorders. Through the sleep interview, you can have some signals where you could say, hey, maybe it's interesting to send you to the pneumologist or the neurophysiologist because he's specialized in the apnea. You can give some recommendations, some things that it could be helpful for the patient, but the main problem is better treated by them.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So can you give us a little sense of, you know, insomnia obviously is a big issue, I think, probably across the globe. And then, you know, we talk about circadian rhythm disorder, for example, that you were referencing. How would someone, like, what would you look for if you were trying to figure out what was going on? Maybe it was insomnia, maybe it was something else. What types of things might a person need to share with you to help you diagnose them?
Well, first, we use some kind of questionnaires, like some tests, like the Epworth or the Thun test, There it helped us a little bit to know. And then we asked a very common questions like, when do you go to the bed? How much time do you spend, relaxing before going to bed? And what is your wake-up hour? And do you have any wake-up in the middle of the night? Or this kind of question give us some clues to know what is maybe an insomnia, or maybe if it's the cardiac rhythm disorder, because sometimes, for example, these two disorders are very similar sometimes, because you don't know if the insomnia patient always go at, 2 a.m. In the night, or because of his or her thoughts, intrusive negative thoughts, or it is because you have your internal clock not in your hour. So this is interesting to know all the, sleeping. What about if you have a nap, or how many naps do you have in 1 week? All these kind of things. If you're taking medication, are you taking something natural like melatonin, or all these kind of questions? Are you doing exercise? And what about your timetable schedule? And all those things help us to know a little bit. And then we go knowing more or less what's the problem, and we treat individually.
So, you know, and again, I can only ask you about your experience, but in your experience, do the clients fit any sort of mold, meaning like, are they typically older? Are they typically younger? Are they typically male, female? Is it all across the board? What do you actually see in your practice?
Well, about the age, it depends. I mean, I have some patients like, as my age, like adult or adult. There are some of them that are like in their 50s or 60s or something. But mainly like young adults and adults. Because of my experience, I have noticing that there are some kind of personalities, like people with a tendency to anxiety or depression or obsessive thoughts, self-demanding, controlling, perfectionist, maybe hypochondriac, are more likely to develop insomnia because these factors are predisposing to it. It will influence. Yeah, sorry.
All right. So, you know, the anxiety is certainly a very big issue for a lot of people. And, it seems like there's a lot there in terms of treatment. So what I'd like to do is I want to talk about that a little bit more. But before we do, let's take our second commercial break here, and then we'll come back and talk about that.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
All right. We are back on Sleep Science Today. We're talking about treating people with sleep disorders. Primarily, we were talking about insomnia. So let's pick up where we left off. So you have a patient who comes in. They tell you that they're having trouble falling asleep, staying asleep, whatever it may be. You figure out they've got chronic insomnia. And then you also find out that they have a lot of anxiety because of different things that are happening in their life. What does the typical treatment look like when you're dealing with someone with those characteristics?
Well, the main treatment is the CBTI. I mean, it's the cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia. It is an effectively treat long-term sleep problems such as insomnia, and it's the first treatment recommended. And this therapy helps you to determine which thoughts and behaviors cause or worsen your sleep problems. You learn to replace these thoughts and behaviors with habits that promote deep sleep. Unlike sleep pills, CBT helps you overcome the causes, like the root of your sleep problems. Mm-hmm. So why we cannot sleep? Because there are some mental or physical, but mainly mental, hyperactivation that prevent us from sleeping. To sleep, we have to be relaxed. Otherwise, we will not be able to achieve it. Paradoxically, we cannot control it, but we can control our thoughts and the actions that help us to sleep better. So more or less, that's the idea. And the CBTI teaches you to look for and change that those beliefs that can affect your ability to sleep. You can learn how to control or to manage, I prefer to say manage, those negative thoughts and worries that keep you awake. And the behavioral part helps you to create a good sleep habits and avoid behaviors that keep you from sleeping well.
Right. So, you know, I guess like when I'm working with someone and we're doing CBTI, CBTI has a very particular process that you go through and things you go through. But if you have a patient who also, like you're describing, has high anxiety because maybe they, you know, are having trouble at work, or maybe they're having trouble in their relationship, or, you know, there could be lots of different reasons that people have high anxiety. It's sort of additional work or separate work or however you want to describe it, where, you know, working on that anxiety is just as important as doing the things that you do with the CBTI, right? So, you know, I want to talk about, like, more specifically about what CBTI looks like, but I want to preface it with the fact that there's other things that may be being treated at the same time, right?
Yeah, well, for example, I like to work with my patients like parallelly in two ways. I mean, I want to attack or treat directly to the sleep with the things that I mentioned before, like sleep hygiene, what are the thoughts that you have in the middle of the night? Oh, I cannot sleep, tomorrow it would be a disaster, because if I don't sleep, I cannot be at my 100% in work, and those things. So mainly, I think that most of the problems come from the day. I mean, how you manage all your thoughts and your inner dialogue, it influences a lot how you go to bed. So we treat that like the night, and we treat the day too. And it's like, tell me about a problematic situation, how you feel it. What about your vital areas? For example, I like to explore how is your health? How is your relationship? How is your family relationship? And what about your hobbies? What about your self-care moments? What about everything? And do you schedule all those things so you have like a balance in your life? And because of treating that and treating that anxiety and exploring what is alarming you, you can improve your sleep. And it's something that is, it goes hand in hand.
Right. So, yeah, no, I mean, you know, it's It's interesting, like when I'm doing CBTI with someone, for me, we keep a sleep diary. So we have very specific numbers to see what time did the person go to bed, how long did it take for them to fall asleep, all this data. And sometimes you'll be working with someone and you look at their data and you see, you know, the last 2 weeks or so, things were getting really good, they're getting better sleep, things are going well. And then you see this strange day where they were like up all night for some reason. And you're like, wow, that's really different, you know? And then you talk with them and you find out, oh, well, that was the night that, and then some sort of a thing happened in their life that made them very anxious, made them very worried. Maybe they had a car accident. Maybe they took someone to the hospital. You know, there could be anything. So it's interesting when you're looking at the data and the data, it stands out, you know, that something was going on with that person. And then you ask and you confirm it. So that anxiety really throws them off, at least for that night.
Absolutely. So, I agree with you. With you, explore a little bit, like, because at the first time, it's like, no, everything goes well. I can deal with everything. It's like a normal day. And you are like, yeah, really? Let's talk about it. Tell me about your explore. That's what you just said.
Right, right. So let's share with the audience, if someone comes in for CBTI, we talk about CBTI a lot, but they may not know what that really looks like. Is that something that they come in for one treatment and they go home and they're done? Or what is actually happening when you're doing CBTI with somebody?
Well, it's a treatment where... I mean, it's not like a magic pill. I mean, it's not like the pill that you go to the doctor and you can have a good night. It is a long-term treatment. Maybe you can deal with your insomnia because multiple factors in 3 or 4 sessions, but maybe you need more sessions. I mean, the protocol is between 6 and 8 sessions, but it depends. There are people that need more. So mainly we need to establish that functional ideas and functional thought so you can sleep better and to deal in your daily life with all the good things and the bad things that you have in your life. That's more or less the way CBTI is, or the CBT treatment usually goes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I always try to, you know, explain to my patients what to expect. And one of the things that I tell them is, you know, when you start this, things will appear as if they're getting worse before they get better. And what I mean by that is that when they first come in and they've got, you know, insomnia, they've got kind of maybe they're napping during the day and then they wake in the middle of the night and their sleep is kind of scattered all over the place. And the goal is to get them to restful sleep consistently throughout the night. And so CBTI is working on that. And one of the things we'll do is I call it sort of recalibrating their sleep schedule. And so, you know, we may set a smaller window of actual sleep time to match the actual sleep they're getting. So they may lay down in bed and then toss and turn for an hour or two, and then maybe sleep a little bit and then get up in the middle of the night for an hour and then go back to bed and then wake up early. And so the time they're spending in bed, they're not actually sleeping all of that time. They're sleeping some of that time. And so we will say, well, looking at the numbers, you've actually only slept for 5 of the 8 hours that you were laying in your bed. So we may start off by having them sleep just that 5 or 5.5 hours and then get out of bed otherwise. And so that throws them off because it's so different from what they've been used to doing. And they feel like, oh my God, I'm getting worse. And it's like, well, actually, yes, it seems like you're getting worse, but it's the first part of recalibrating. So, you know, it's always interesting to make sure that they understand that. And then, you know, then they kind of cross that that hump and things start to get better. And then they're like, oh my gosh, it's a miracle.
Yeah, old Ben says that.
Yeah. So, you know, so it's really nice to see it when they get the improvement. So how about this? What tips do you have if someone is having trouble sleeping, and if they wanted to, like, for example, look at their room and their bed and lighting and all that? What type of tips do you have for someone to things they can improve to get a better night's sleep?
Well, there are some sleep hygiene tips or recommendations, like as you said, for example, improve your sleeping area. I mean, create a comfortable sleeping zone, keep the room quiet, dark, cool. Now in the summer here in Spain, it's very, very hot. It is very complicated to get a quality of sleep because we need lower temperature. In case that if you have air conditioner or something, it is easier. But if you don't have it, it's really difficult. So we have to assume that you have a bad night because of the heat. But if you can control that, it's perfect. Another recommendation is don't have a TV in the room. Don't have a clock inside because it is very tricky if you want to see the hour. But it increases your anxiety, because if you have a wake up in the middle of the night and it's like 2 a.m. So like, oh, let's try to sleep. And you open your eyes and again, it's 3 in the middle of the night. And it's like, oh, I have been waking up like 1 hour. I don't have enough time to sleep, and all the anxiety increase. So this is very important, not to look to the clock. And I don't know, and to go to bed very calm and very relaxed. So 2 hours before going to bed, do a really relaxed or calm activity, like watch TV and have like very low the light, like warm light, not to have a blue filter lights, because that frightens or the melatonin, and it is not worth it for us. So to have like very low and warm lights, and not to have a very complicated situation before going to bed, because that you can go thinking about that situation. Let's focus on the problem next day in the morning, and let's take part of that.
Right.
More or less, I think that are the main things.
Well, that's a lot of good tips and things that people can do and take a look and kind of survey their own bedroom and see if there's some changes they can make there that can improve, you know, things in one night. You know, they can make those types of changes. And then if they find that they're having trouble and it's consistent, then there are sleep specialists like yourself available. And, you know, there's a lot of opportunities to help them correct those things. So we are out of time. I really appreciate this. We learned a lot about you and how, you know, sleep is treated in Spain. And we tried to do a comparison here with the U.S. A lot of similarities, mostly similarities. And I really appreciate you taking the time to join us and share all the information with our audience.
Well, thank you very much. For me, it has a pleasure to be here. Yeah, I think that I could help. If I could help in something, yeah, I'm very grateful for that.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Sleep Science Today and learning how to sleep better with your host, Andrew Kolsky, on UK Health Radio. For more information on how you can achieve better sleep, go to sleepsciencetoday.com. Remember, sleep science today and sleep better tonight.